Looking to expand your horizons with books and podcasts? Check out Thoughts from a Page podcast with Cindy Burnett as she interviews authors and individuals in the publishing industry about books, new and old, as well as industry trends. ThoughtsFromAPage.com features everything you need, including recommended podcast episodes to get you started on your listening literary adventure with this excellent podcast. Check it out now, available on all major podcast streaming services, including Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Link in the show notes.
Hey everyone, this is B. Jemine, aka The Terrible Aussie, and before we get to the latest episode of the podcast, we here at the Super Network would like to send a very special thank you to Pete, the host of the podcast A Dingo Ate My Movie, for being our latest subscriber on Patreon. Thank you so much for your support, Pete. It really means so much to both Marcy and I, and we deeply appreciate it, mate. Once again, thank you so much. And now, on to the show.
The following is a Super Network production with Super Marcy.
I hold back a lot. If I didn't, I would be my dark half.
The terrible Australian B. Jemine.
Probably the most iconic moment is the blood coming out of the elevator. Definitely not in the book.
It contains coarse language.
What is going on? What?
Mature themes.
We all know that Stephen King writes bullies to the extreme.
Potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. Please find us at supermarcy.com and subscribe to us via Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Enjoy.
G'day everyone, this is B. Jemine, aka The Terrible Aussie, and welcome back to episode 17 of the King's Own podcast, the podcast with my co-host Super Marcy and I dive into the film and TV adaptations of the novels of Stephen King. And with me, as always, is of course, my lovely co-host, the one, the only Super Marcy. Hello, Marcy, how are you?
Hey, hey, doing all right. How are you, Bede?
Oh, not too bad, thanks. I've got a bit of a sty on my eyelid at the moment, so my eyelid is like a bit swollen at the moment. And now I'm creeping everybody out who is hearing this. But outside of that, though, things have been pretty good. Sort of been busy with work and life in general. And pretty good on my end, Marcy. How about yourself?
Yeah, things have been okay. Obviously, I was a little bit unwell a few weeks ago and just been recovering from that and just recovering a little bit from fibro in general. So yeah, if those listening, usually this podcast would have been our end of the month one, but it is now the start of the month one. We had to move a few things around just to fit in with our schedules and stuff, but we persist no matter what, and that's what we do. We've been on a schedule since this year for the first time in 12 years, and we're making it work as best as we possibly can.
Indeed. And it seems to be working out doing a schedule. Yeah. Instead of just basically just recording an episode whenever we want. But it seems to work, and everyone seems to be enjoying the consistency, which is good. But that's the thing, though, like regardless on how we sort of feel health-wise, the episodes will still go on, even if it ends up only being one of us on a show, because I can only imagine people want to listen to me by myself for about an hour on a show, but I digress. But
even if one of us can't speak very well, we've got, you know, robot Marcy, aka Martha, to fill in, so it's all good.
Indeed, Martha is now part of the Super Network family, and she's always happy to come back anytime. And if I'm not here, I'll find a way for Nicolas Cage to make an appearance on the show.
Exactly.
But Marcy, you and I are not alone on this episode.
We are not. We have managed to convince someone to be on our podcast again.
Indeed. But even though she has been on quite a number of our episodes of our shows throughout the years, but this is her first time on The King Zone.
Yes, very exciting.
And she's, I would consider, a legend of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, is Miss Beatrix Harper. Hello, B, how are you?
Hello, everyone, and hello to all of our listeners.
Indeed.
Hello.
Hello.
And it has been a few weeks since you've last been on the show because you were on our special bonus episode of Podcasters of Horror to talk about all things Goosebumps. What has been going on in your life since that episode, B?
Oh, where to start? All the murder and the orgies and the blood and the sex and the rock and roll. Oh, I don't know how I... Oh, no, not just kidding.
And that was just yesterday.
No, I've mainly just been been doing the nurse thing. Yes, that's been keeping me occupied. But other than that, nothing particularly special to write home about yet.
Although when you were sort of saying all that stuff before, I was thinking, like, is this a stealth episode of After Dark that I'm not aware of? Because I'm not exactly sure.
You mean, is it like a podcast version of a fake taxi?
Exactly. See, I want to do a podcast like that now. Just get in a taxi and just record it.
Pants optional.
At 10 minutes in and you're like, I thought this was a normal taxi ride. When the driver turns around and be like, oh, this ride's going to cost you $1,000. And then you're like, I don't have $1,000. Well, you've got to do something.
Pay me with something else.
Or be like, well, you can. We'll won't let you pay for the tab if you talk about our sponsors on the show.
Fair enough.
Or you'll be like, oh, do you want me to pay you by buying you some fried chicken?
Exactly. Indeed. But speaking of fried chicken, as a good segue. Yeah. As a great segue into this episode of The King Zone. Strangely enough, we're going to be only talking about one Stephen King property in this episode. Because most recently, Apple TV had recently premiered a TV miniseries that happens to have been adapted from a novel by Stephen King. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, was the miniseries Lisi story. So we'll be talking about that for this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we will.
And which will be interesting because from what I gather is like only one of us here tonight has actually also had read the book prior to this miniseries.
Mm, which was not me because I haven't read it.
Indeed. And it's not me because, you know, I'm a very slow reader and it takes me like a billion years to read a book. So that only leaves only one person and I can guess who that is. It's me, Nicolas Cage. I've read this book. I even read it backwards because I was kind of fall into the book. Although, wow. In my opinion, this book should have been called Khaleesi's Story. And it should. And in my version of the book, it was all about Daenerys from Game of Thrones, who happens to be somehow, after she died at the end of the TV show Game of Thrones, somehow was projected into the future and became the main character of the story, Khaleesi's Story, even though that's not what it's called. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is because I read the book backwards. I don't know. I don't know. Upside down because I'm that crazy.
And but, I was feeding my truffle peg.
Exactly. And then I just like gave it to the book to my truffle peg and he thought it was a good read too.
But, and there we have it, folks.
Indeed. Nick, thanks for coming on the show again. You can leave now. Okay, goodbye. But it's actually B who has read the book to this miniseries. So I will definitely have a lot of questions to ask you. We'll get right to it and talk about Lisi's Story, which was directed by Pablo Larrañaga. If I butchered his name, please forgive me. And he's actually quite a well-known director out there in the world because he is probably best known for directing the Jackie Onassis biopic, Jackie, which starred Natalie Portman. Mm. And he also directed a whole bunch of other movies, including Naruto, and most recently Emma. So he's a very sort of internationally renowned director. Mm-hmm. The whole miniseries, well, he directed all the episodes of this series. And not only that, all the episodes of this miniseries happened to be written by Stephen King himself, which, of course, is based on his 2006 novel of the same name. And the miniseries stars Julianne Moore, Clive Owen, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Dane DeHaan, Michael Pitt, Sung Kang, and Joan Allen. And the plot summary for this miniseries, which I am reading off IMDb, a widow becomes the object of a dangerous stalker obsessed with her husband's work. Now, I'm just going to state it right now. That synopsis is only just the tip of the iceberg about Lisey's story. because let's just say, even though that is a small part of what happens in this miniseries, there is a whole lot more that happens throughout this whole mix, so which we'll definitely be talking about. But since B, you are our guest on this episode tonight, tell us your thoughts on the original book of Lisey's story, and also how does the miniseries compare as an adaptation?
Oh, let us start. All right, so first things first, I should inform everybody that I haven't read this book for quite some time. The last time I remember reading it in full was back in 2016. So that was like 5 or so years ago. So my memory will admittedly be rather misty. But Lisey's story at the core is a drama, but it also has aspects of horror in it. And that's a pretty common trope when it comes to Stephen King. Were I to think of another sort of close comparison of his books that sort of combine the mundane with the magical, it would probably be Rose Madder. Rose Madder like employs like very sort of similar things to what Lisey's story would do, but yeah, it's basically a story about a woman who, it's like what Bede said. It's like there's so much more going on in the story that it's something that you really do need to read, or in this case, it's something that you need to watch to get a full measure of. So yes, I do admit that's a very sort of vague rundown, but as with any of Stephen King's work, it's best that you appreciate it on the page, like reading it more than anything else.
Awesome.
That's pretty much it.
Don't worry, we'll dive in more into it, because this is, as we always say at the beginning of every episode, all our podcasts are spoiler filled, so we'll definitely go into more aspects of the plot of this miniseries. But Marcy, what did you think of the miniseries, your initial thoughts anyway, of Lisey's story?
Yeah, so obviously I have not read it. I had just heard that the book King had called his favourite, and our good friend and one of our regular guests, who's a big Stephen King reader, Lance from The Horror Returns, had said personally this was his least favourite book, and he had mentioned rumours that even that it wasn't written by King, it was written by his wife. And I find that to be an interesting little rumour. So that was really, I guess, all I knew going in. And I didn't even realise, aside from Julianne Moore, like the cast for this. I was blown away by this cast. I'm like, wow, that's really, really impressive. So, yeah, I went in with an open mind. I as with King, and this is why we do the podcast, even his worst sort of like adaptations, there's still something interesting in there. So I feel like even if I don't necessarily enjoy something, or it's not for me necessarily, that it's still quite interesting. So yeah, I felt that this had a very strong and interesting start, and I was very much invested in this story. But I feel like as it kind of gets to that third act structure, things just kind of fell, things just didn't quite flow as well. And I don't know, it really just didn't click with me as much. And then as it kind of wraps itself up, I feel like it what's the right word? Maybe fixed itself a little bit because it kind of ended in the way that I thought it was going to end because of all these themes that it's covering. And it does make sense. I can't really, again, compare to the book in these kinds of terms, but I feel like at least more towards that third act, things just kind of fell apart a bit for me. But that said, I feel like this has a really incredible cast, and I think they're all so good. And I love the fact that we have, you know, we've got Lisi, yeah.
Yep.
Played by Julianne Moore, who previously was in the Carrie remake, so she's already been in a Stephen King property. And then her sister, I believe the character's Darla. Is it Darla? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Played by Jennifer Jason Leigh, who was, of course, in a previous Stephen King adaptation of Dolores Claiborne. And then the other sister, Amanda, or Manda, played by Joan Allen, who was in the adaptation of it's a Good Marriage, I believe the film was called.
Mm-hmm.
So all three have been in previous Stephen King works before, which I found really, really cool.
What is that? It's a hockey stick. A signed hockey stick. It was in her hubby's sports cupboard. Can't make out the name, though. I think hockey players must be illiterate.
It's Patrice Bergeron, and if anything happens to it, Matt's gonna kill you.
So, what's the plan?
I'm gonna tackle him, and then once he's down, you can pile on, and then I'm gonna take him to
Booyah. You're gonna take him to that place that you went?
Booyah Moon?
Mm-hmm. Amanda, do you know why you were a double? And the Afghan, too? It was in both places at once.
I'm sorry, the what?
The Afghan that Goodma gave us as a wedding present. Scott loved it.
You married a very strange man.
Scott was a double, too. He was a double about 8 years ago.
Never said anything about doubles, at least to me. He knew how to get there, Lisi, but beyond that, I don't think he knew very much.
No, but he knew about the pool, because he used to talk about it all the time when he gave lectures. The pool, where we all went down to drink. I thought it was a metaphor.
Now you know better.
What do you remember?
I remember it was beautiful and terrible. And I never want to go back there again.
Good. Then you're going to stay here with us.
Okay, I'll try.
What about the people on the benches? The ones that are wrapped up. Who are they?
I don't want to talk about the shrouded ones.
But what do you think they are?
I don't want to talk about that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I do remember one thing. Not from Booyah the Moon, but it's from here. Something Scott said. It's after the last time that I cut myself, you know, when I went dark before he died. Something about a story. It was Lisi's story, he said. He never dedicated a book to you, did he?
No. I asked him not to.
Why?
Because everything changed once he became famous. You know, the world came in. You have to have a private part to a marriage, a secret part. And if we hadn't have had that, we never would have survived all this rich and famous shit.
But also, and it was weird, like, before I started watching this, I saw a tweet, and I can't remember who tweeted it. It was like, what's happened to Clive Owen? And I was like, yeah, I haven't seen him in anything for a while. I switched this on. I'm like, oh, shit, he's in this? Oh, wow, okay. And I was so surprised because, again, I haven't seen Clive Owen for quite some time. And, again, it's like a, what do you call it? Like, he's reteamed with Julianne Moore as husband and wife. And they were obviously, they did that in Children of Men. And they both have brilliant chemistry. And that definitely continues on with this. Yeah, and as Stephen King does, he always has very bizarre and messed up antagonists. And it's no different here, and I'm not surprised they cast the role perfectly with Dane DeHaan, who is so unsettling and creepy and weird. Dude. I don't know. Why did I watch this? And then I'm immediately like, why do I find him attractive now? Something wrong with me.
Why are you still wondering this, Marcy?
I don't know me. I wonder this every day.
I've now sort of realized, yes, this is now an After Dark episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow,
Yeah. Yeah. That's the weird thing with me. I see the most messed up character. I'm like, strangely attracted to them. But yeah, I found this to be a fairly solid miniseries. That had a few issues which I've mentioned. But Bede, how did you find Khaleesi's whatever the heck her name is story?
Well, that's the thing with Khaleesi's story. I've heard about, you know, the book for a while now, even though I haven't read it myself. But I've always heard, like, you know, over the years that, like B said earlier, that it was actually Stephen King's favorite book that he ever wrote. And it's interesting hearing that kind of that sort of rumor that, you know, Stephen King's wife, Tabitha, may have secretly wrote the book. So it's kind of, but I haven't really sort of looked around to see if there's any confirmation of that rumor or not. So I'm just going to assume, you know, until there's any substantial proof that Stephen King wrote this book, but also at the same time, he did write every episode of this miniseries. So, but I was sort of like, yeah, so I didn't know what to expect from Khaleesi's story. I just knew from the outset that it was kind of different in terms of other Stephen King novels that he wrote, that it's kind of, even though it has elements of horror, fantasy and that, but it was kind of more of a drama, which incorporated those elements into the story. But also another thing I felt what made me interested in to watch this miniseries, of course, well, two things actually, the cast, like the fact that they assembled a cast like this, or a mini series, just made me very excited to check it out. And also just behind the scenes as well, because you got Pablo Larraín, who I've seen quite a number of his films, and he's such a really unique filmmaker, and he's also a very visually stylish filmmaker as well.
100%. This visually is absolutely stunning.
Oh yeah.
It like, really is. Like I do feel like they got the right people for this, but I will not cut you off. I apologize, go.
Well, we'll talk about that sort of visual style in a second. But yeah, so having him, having seen quite a number of his films, and also, you know, having Stephen King write all the episodes for the miniseries, and also having J.J. Abrams as an executive producer on the series as well. So it's just a combination of those three very individual talents that made me sort of think like, oh, this may be something that's really special. And I will admit from the very outset, like I had no idea what the hell was going on. Because like outside of the small little synopsis I said earlier, because there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes on in the story.
There's so much going on.
Yeah, in terms of plot, like it also does follow this character of Khaleesi, played by Julianne Moore, who is still mourning the loss of her husband, Scott, 2 years after he died, and is sort of like, you know, sort of packing up everything up from their life together. And of course, she's being harassed by this kind of college professor who wants all of Scott's unpublished books.
Because this is a Stephen King property. What else would the male character be
but a writer,
a writer of very famous proportions? And I think I did forget to kind of say this earlier, but you can definitely see with this, the inspiration came from his Stephen King almost dying in the car crash. Obviously, because there's a lot of those kind of themes, but and this is something they actually say within the series, and I'm sure it's in the book as well, is that and I do feel like he did write this, and his intention is this is the one that's for and to his wife.
Yeah, well, I've sort of those
experiences, but yeah. I digress.
Yeah, well, I was going to say like in terms, because I'm looking up the synopsis for the book, and it does say here that the genesis of the book was from an incident in 2003 when King actually came down with double pneumonia. While he was in hospital, and his wife Tabitha decided to redesign his studio. And when he came home from the hospital and see all the books and all of his belongings in the boxes, King sort of had this image of like what his studio would look like after he died, and that's where the basis for This story came.
So I stuffed up. He had double pneumonia, not a car crash.
Yeah.
Whatever. Although, it's close enough.
Yeah. Well, they were very in close proximity to each other, these two events. So.
Yeah.
But, yeah, well, I guess also, like, besides that sort of aspect, like, her being harassed by this college professor who wants all of Scott's unpublished work. So he rings up this psychotic fan, played by Dane DeHaan, who, of course, stalks her as well. But at the same time, though, we kind of go back into her relationship with her husband, Scott, as we find out about his past. But then... And of course, like her relationship with her two sisters, particularly Amanda, who's suffers from suicidal tendencies and is very depressed. And but also finding out about Amanda and Scott's relationship, because they have a specific bond with each other. But then we sort of in the first episode, I believe this was the first episode from what I remember, is that like Scott goes visits Amanda and he sort of is trying to coax her out of this trance that she's in. And then all of a sudden, like, he goes in to give her a kiss, and all of a sudden, water comes shooting out of his mouth into her mouth. And I'm just, like, sitting there going, like, what the fuck just happened?
It's symbolism.
Yes.
I don't know. But, yeah, she's like, in a catatonic state. And I will say, like, if you do watch this or read it, because I'm assuming the book, we'll have similar things. Like, there is definitely a, I guess, a content warning, because there is, like, self-harm, suicidal tendencies, all these kinds of things that it really shows you, and, you know, like, abuse of so many kinds. So definitely proceed with caution. But, yeah, that scene where he, like, plants a kiss while she's in this catatonic state, and then the water is just coming out of his mouth into hers. It's like, what? It leaves you very confused. So I relate to that, Bede.
Yeah, but it kind of at the same time, though, I was confused by as I was. Then I'm like, I want to know where this is going. Where is this story going? And then, of course, as it goes along, and we sort of know, The series has a very non-linear structure, so we go back and forth in the past and present, with Lisey sort of remembering these specific memories with her husband while she's doing the scavenger hunt that her husband organized for before he died, called a bull hunt. And but then we sort of realize, like, he sort of he's found a way, and that he explains to her that every now and again he goes to this kind of this fantasy world called Booyah Moon, where, you know, there's this pool of water that actually rejuvenates you. Like, if you're injured or cut yourself and that, it actually heals your body. And also there's some other really creepy stuff in there, including, like, this giant monster creature, which from what I've read is called the Long Boy, which is such a unique and interesting design because it's this giant with blue glowing eyes, but its entire skin is like, it's like bodies of people stacked on top of each other and all that. And then from there, we all even flash back to when Scott was a child, when he and his older brother were living with, their very obviously sort of unhinged father, played by Michael Pitt, who it took me an episode to actually really recognize that was him.
I did not see him at all. Like, you know, knowing it was him, I never could see it. Like, where did he go? Is that really him? And then you're like, yes, of course it's him, because look at the character he's playing. What else would they get pretty for this much role? Because Dane DeHaan's already playing another role, so they couldn't get him for that. But indeed. Yeah.
Although I had to laugh, sort of, it just seemed like a competition between Dane DeHaan and Michael Pitt, who could have, like, the creepiest character in the whole miniseries.
It was like a massive kissing contest of psychosis.
Indeed. Yeah. But at the same time, though, as unhinged as Michael Pitt's character is, the series does have a lot of empathy with him, because it's very obvious that he's like he suffers from some kind of mental disability, or at least that's what I've sort of gathered from the series, because from that sort of section, like, where Scott explains, like, he and his family they had to like cut themselves open every now and again to let out something called the bad, which is like this kind of illness that it has infected the family. And if it consumes you, you become truly psychotic, which is something that actually happens to Scott's brother.
Yeah. See, this kind of like the flashback to the childhood reminded me, or it just felt very reminiscent of like Frailty with those dynamics. Like now I'm like, I need to watch that movie again. But it for those who may have not seen the show and don't really obviously care about spoilers, hence they're listening, that's really what it kind of reminded me of. And I found those scenes were very effective, very disturbing. But the two kid actors are phenomenal in these roles too, as like Scott and his brother.
Oh yeah, they're both really, really good. And I'm sort of I don't have their names listed here in front of me, but they were both really good. And and also Michael Peter, like I said, was great as the dad. But yeah, it's sort of a very interesting series. And as it went along, like I will admit, like I think when it comes to sort of the more fantastical stuff of the story, I kind of wish it was explained a little bit better, or at least kind of dived into a little bit more. Like is this kind of like this whole thing where Scott and his family kind of are able to go to this place called Boyer Moon, or is it only specific people can go to this place? Because Amanda can easily go there, and hence she gets trapped at some point, and Lisey finds a way to actually go there herself. So there's definitely elements that I wish kind of were explained a little bit more, at least on that front. But everything else though I just did find very effective. Like I found the relationship between Lisey and Scott very emotional, and you definitely see why these two love each other so much. And and I think at the end of the day, this series is really an examination on grief and loss learning to let go as well.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Definitely that.
Yeah, but B, I know it's been a little while since you've read the book, but how did from what you remember of the book, like how did the miniseries sort of capture a lot of these aspects that we've talked about?
All right, so as we were discussing earlier, with Stephen King having very hands-on involvement with this series, you can tell. Mr. King has a very particular way of writing, specifically when it comes to dialogue and circumstances and whatnot. Whenever I heard a character open their mouth to say something, I could definitely hear King's words. Those are Stephen King's words that I'm hearing. Now, how you choose to take these words is completely up to your discretion. Sometimes they work, other times they don't. But in saying so, it's going back to what Bede has just said. Like, more than anything else, Lisey's story is a story about grief. It's also about love. And when somebody that we love passes on, like, what is there left? It is their memory. And what is memory? A memory can be all sorts of things. It can be something in your head. It can be an object that you pick up. It's something that you've heard from somebody else. And that's where the whole non-linear plot structure comes from. Now, something interesting that occurred to me while I was watching it, the use of water. Water is a symbol for a pathway between worlds, like a portal. A portal between worlds, between the spirit world and the world that we live in. Water is used quite a lot in mythology, especially when it comes to referring to the passage of the dead and how we can transcend from one life into another. So with that vision of Scott, like opening his mouth and like transferring the water into Lisey, that's basically his way of like getting her like into this realm, basically, you know, whether or not it's real or not. I think that's what they were going for. So yes, that was a very sort of interesting way of doing it. When it comes to this world, to me, this world that's inhabited by this monster and where these people can go, I saw that as a metaphor for depression, because unless you have it, you really can't be there. You really can't travel to this dark place that only you can understand. What is that noise?
That's Freddy. Stop. Sit on the seat. Why are you scratching at the seat? It's not going to change.
You realize now I'm going to have to keep this all in now, Marcy.
Special guest star, Freddy. Freddy's like, it's all about me.
Staring at me like, what did I do?
Oh, God.
But continue.
Okay, so, basically, I find this entire story to be, you know, not only a metaphor about grief, but also finding a way to dig yourself out of these dark places. And the best way to do that is finding the strength within yourself as well as the strength of everybody else around you. We are all one interconnected network, and I think that's what King was going for, because the water can contain all sorts of aspects of life, can't it? It's an entire sort of ecosystem. You have the real world, you have the spirit world, and how it connects. Like, you know, none of us live in a vacuum, and I think that's what that entire sort of aspect of this fantasy world is all about.
I definitely agree
as well, and also just how I gotta give it another shout, because you were sort of mentioned how the look of this film before, I mean, miniseries, Marcy, which was, it's definitely, this miniseries without that is probably one of the most visually stunning TV shows or miniseries I've ever seen. Like, each shot just looks like, was just so beautiful and just so, it felt more like an actual film than a miniseries. Like, and I guess it kind of says a lot, because I'm just looking up the cinematographer behind this miniseries, who shot all the episodes, are Darius Conji. He's a 2-time Oscar-nominated cinematographer who has done quite a number of films that we've all seen before in the past, in terms of, he was the cinematographer behind films such as The City of Lost Children, Seven, Evita, Alien Resurrection, The Knife Gate, The Beach, Panic Room, Funny Games, The Ruins, Midnight in Paris, Amour, The Immigrant, Orksha, and most recently, Uncut Gems. So,
oh wow, cool.
Jesus. So he
talented motherfucker.
Indeed, and I think with him and also Pablo Larrañy, who has such a unique visual, unique approach as a filmmaker. Like their combination just gives this miniseries such a beautiful look. Like, not just like even the scenes when we're in Booyah Moon, but just even just in like general. Like, this whole miniseries is just absolutely gorgeous and atmospheric and creepy, but just absolutely stunning as well.
It really is, yeah.
But I guess for me, one of the key things I really liked about this miniseries, of course, are the performances.
Yes. And
this is definitely without a doubt Julianne Moore's show, and she's just—I mean, we're all big Julianne Moore fans, and she once again gives such great work in this film as Lisi, and it's interesting kind of watching this miniseries, because in a lot of ways, this miniseries could also be a companion piece to Jackie, Pablo Larrañy's film, because, you know, they're both films that have non-linear structures and they have main female central characters, and they're also about characters dealing with grief and loss as well. So, I think Julianne Moore does such a great job, but she's always been a brilliant actress. I mean, she's one of the greatest actresses out there in the world right now, and she's just phenomenal in this miniseries. But everyone's great, Clive Owen is great as Scott, even though we only see him mainly in like flashbacks and all that. Like, he's really good as well. And like you, Marcy, I see Clive Owen pop up every now and again in stuff, But it was really welcoming just to see him back in like a big capacity in a miniseries like this.
Definitely.
And Jennifer Jason Leigh, I think even though she doesn't have the showiest of roles in this miniseries compared to everyone else, I think she does a really good job as Darla. She's a character you could easily like hate.
Yeah.
Because she's definitely the sort of disbelieving one of the whole the group who sort of is like sort of questioning everything and just doesn't believe in what's going on. But I think she does such a good job with the role. But I think without a doubt, the two best performances of the supporting cast are Joan Allen and Dane DeHaan as Amanda and Jim, respectively. And especially Dane DeHaan, who plays such a creepy character. But the thing I love about his performance, and we've talked about this a lot, is like in nearly in every scene he's in, he's always eating something.
Yep.
Like it begins in one scene where he meets the professor, Roger Dashiell, played by Ron Chirpas Jones, in this bar, and he just sort of offers a bar, you want something to eat, and it's just like this crunchy bit of fried chicken. Which made me the
crunchy fries,
and it just made me so hungry. And you can just Dane's just sitting there like just eating this fried chicken very slowly. And then after that, for nearly every scene, for quite a number of episodes, there's always a scene where Jim is always eating something. Like at some point, he's like eating a pizza, then he's eating a sub, and then he's eating a sandwich. It's like the dude just doesn't stop eating throughout most of this miniseries.
And he doesn't gain weight, for fuck's sake. How is that possible?
I know. If I was eating that fried chicken, guys.
but at the same time, though, as funny as that sort of running thing is, his character is so creepy, and he really sort of captures that sort of psychotic fan that like a lot of celebrities would have.
So much.
Indeed. Like he's basically like an uber serious version of Moose from The Fanatic. Except with more fried chicken. he just did such a good job, and you just feel very intimidated by him. And there's one scene in particular I really love, was this scene where, and apparently from what I've read, this was actually a scene that was written for the miniseries. It wasn't in the book.
Okay.
It's where Jim is at this local library.
We're closing, sir, so.
Do you know this was Scott Landon's favorite book when he was a kid? Finally got around to reading it.
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, you must have known him, right? Didn't he pay for this library?
I knew him to speak to him, but I knew his wife better, Lisa. Lisi. Yeah, she used to come in often. Sometimes she read to the children. Actually, I believe it was she who funded...
No, money came from him. Didn't it? Everything came from him.
Well, I suppose so. In a manner of speaking.
Ain't no manner about it. Everything came from him. 4 years old. So to tell him the power of the imagination.
Hmm. That's very interesting.
The power of the imagination. Think on that. A seed was planted and it grew from here. You know how I found that out? I got it from my professor friend. He knows everything about Scott Landon. His name is Dashiell. It's a funny name. It could be in one of Scott's books. But I call him Scott because I feel like I know him. By their work shall you know them.
Sir, I really have to close now, so...
Dashiell, like you're hungry, really hungry, so you have to dash for a meal. Get it, Dashiell, dash for a meal. You know, you should put this book in its own special case. With a little plaque underneath that says Scott Landon started here. So it could inspire generations to come. What do you think?
I think that's a good idea.
And he's talking about to this librarian about Scott Landon's favorite kids book, which funnily enough, if you look what the book is, it's a book called... and I had to look this up because I wanted to make sure it was correct. Charlie the Choo Choo,
mm-hmm.
which was actually a kid's book written by Stephen King.
Oh, there you go.
Although he wrote it under a pseudonym, obviously, but I just thought that was a funny little in-joke even I got. So, but the thing is, that whole scene is so creepy because you get to see how obsessed he is with Scott Landon and, like, what he will do. I mean, he'll do whatever he takes to get these sort of unpublished manuscripts. And it leads to a scene which I was legit taken aback by, which I just found so disturbing, was he rocks up at Lisey's house and brutally attacks her. And
you won't be looking at a pizza cutter the same again.
Ooh. Indeed. I was legit, yeah, as soon as he brought, because, like, prior to the scene, you see him in a car eating a pizza. And he has a pizza slice with him. And I'm like, why the hell does he have a pizza slice with him? I mean, just rip the pizza apart. And then, of course, once he brandished it, I'm like, oh, no, no.
Yep.
Oh, no.
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 And then, of course, he just slices away at her. And it's like, no. And that just sent chills down my spine. But it's like, I don't know how you both feel about that scene. This scene just really put me on edge.
Yeah, no, it's fucked up. There's no other way to say it. I'm like, Jesus H. Christ, what the fuck?
Yeah, you can definitely tell that King was like, ooh, I really like this Dane DeHaan kid. Yeah, let me just write like a really fucked up scene just for him so I can get my jollies off.
Yeah, seriously. You know,
Although I hear it wasn't a pizza cutter in the book, because I did read up about stuff that was in the book prior to this episode. Apparently it was a can opener in the...
I think the pizza cutter actually sounds worse.
Yeah, because you wouldn't think of a pizza cutter as a weapon. And I think, and you would think, oh, it's just a pizza cutter. It's not that sharp.
Mm.
Like, what kind of damage gonna do, man? When we see
show you the ways.
You see all the cuts that Julianne Moore has, like, afterwards on her chest. And I'm like, ooh, those are like the worst paper cuts I have ever seen.
It's kind of like with Misery, how, and Stephen King loves his obsessive, fans. You know how they changed what the hobbling scene was from book to screen? And I think, like, how the change they made, just like with here, it's so freaking effective visually that it does, like, you don't want to watch it.
It makes a difference. Yeah, yes.
100%.
Well, as we have seen many times before, especially in this show, like, Stephen King has the power to take normal everyday objects you wouldn't think are threatening in any way and somehow sort of makes them so, like, in whether it's in the books or the films or the TV shows, like, he has that power of making the things you would not expect the most terrifying objects you'd ever see. And now I'm never going to look at a pizza cutter the same way ever again.
Yeah, I mean, I can't look at my lipstick the same again because it's not a laser, and I blame the Tommyknockers for that.
Oh, but that's what I really do love about that whole sort of thing, like, there are so many fucking fantastic ways of conveying horror, but in this case, making something so mundane, something, you know, you don't even think about, in all honesty, and turning it into something menacing, that's similar to what Junji Ito does when it comes to him writing up all these fucked up manga. You know, he can take something like a shape, like a spiral, and he can turn it into some sort of eldritch fucking dread. It's amazing. Also, a little bit of trivia I'd like to add on to the train book that DeHaan's character is seeking out from Scott. In the Dark Tower series, you have this psychotic train called Blaine. I wonder if that was also a reference, not necessarily a reference, but more of like a cheeky sort of tongue-in-cheek sort of thing to that, because if so, that was actually pretty cool.
I think you might be right, because I was just, again, looking this up on Wikipedia. Charlie the Choo Choo is a children's book by Stephen King, published under the pseudonym Beryl Evans. The book was written by Stephen King and published in the previous novel, The Dark Tower 3, The Wastelands.
There you go.
That's it, Blaine.
There you go.
Indeed. It's all connected.
It's all interconnected.
It is.
Exactly.
The King universe.
Yeah.
But I guess, but outside of Dane DeHaan, because like I said, I think he really captures that sort of psychotic fan really well. Mm-hmm. And he's, like I said, he's just so creepy in every scene he is in. And you would think like Dane DeHaan being like that intimidating, but I always keep forgetting, it's like, he was pretty intimidating in Chronicle when he wanted to be, so.
Oh, yes.
And, but that being, but like you were saying, B, I thought it was funny because, you know, Stephen King is such a very distinct writer, especially when he kind of writes adaptations himself. Like, we could kind of know what Stephen King himself is behind the screenplay of whatever project we're watching, because like his ear for dialogue is very interesting. And I just found this so, like, hearing this dialogue, which sometimes can be a bit offbeat and all that, just being in this world that a director like Pablo Larrañaga has created, because it just feels slightly weird and off-putting at first, and you kind of and it takes you back a little bit given how sort of grounded and but at the same time fantastical the story is, but it sort of, but again, it sort of makes it such a unique experience, this miniseries. But
it's off-kilter by design.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. Definitely. Yeah.
But there's one performance in particular, outside of Dane DeHaan, of course. I know we'll have to dive into, and I know this is one I know you'll want to talk about, Marcy, is Joan Allen as Amanda.
Yeah. And again, she's someone I haven't seen pop up in something more recently for a while. And I don't know if it's just because I haven't watched a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I think she hadn't done anything in a few years, at least from what I remember, because I think I sort of was looking at before. Yeah, I think the last movie that she was in was Room, you know, with Brie Larson. And that was like, so that was 6 years ago. But the last, and the last TV show she was in was a show called The Family that came out in 2016. So she hasn't been in anything for 5 years.
So, yeah, again, it was like, oh, wow, she's in this. But, yeah, she just really captures something special within this character, and she's able to, you know, the character does go through, like, quite a lot, and whether it's being in this catatonic state or not, like, she really puts through so much with so little. I think she's fantastic, and the character of Amanda becomes really fascinating because you feel like there's something really going on deep down, and as it shows this kind of connection to this Booyah Moon and with Scott, like, it's really intriguing, but she manages to play like all these different kind of aspects of her character through these flashbacks and, you know, as it jumps around, but she's just so great. Like, oh, when isn't she great? She's just awesome. Seriously.
Oh, yeah. Like, I've always been a fan of Joan Allen. She's just one of those very underrated actresses. Like, even though she's been, like, a three-time Oscar-nominated actress, like, she never really has sort of gotten her due, in my opinion. And she's always great in everything. And, I mean, she even was made a good villain in Death Race, of all movies. but, like, and I hadn't seen her in quite a while as well. And I was actually taken aback at first because I honestly did not recognize her in this miniseries. And that was, like, it actually took me a second to, like, oh, that's Joan Allen. Because with the character being of Amanda, like, she sort of dressed herself down so much and became this character. And I would say, in a way, like, even though the relationship of Lisi and Scott is like the heart of this of this whole miniseries, I would say Amanda's the soul, because Joan Allen does so much with her performance, even just in giving a very expressive performance. Because even though when we see scenes of Amanda in Booyah Moon or in this sort of catatonic state, like, we see what she is feeling and what she's struggling with and how she wants help and needs to get out. And also just, like, the scenes where she starts, like, the first time we see it, where she starts to break down, like, over, like, that scene was just so chilling, you know, and I think this miniseries does such a good job at sort of, like, sort of capturing, like, you know, sort of what it's like, you know, someone going through suffering from depression or and suicidal tendencies.
It's like the saying that, you know, to kind of express how it feels to suffer from, you know, mental illness, that you're stuck in your own head or stuck in your own mind. And this gives such a very hard hitting, like, visual display of that as kind of this, you know, metaphor with the story. Like, it does hit hard, especially, you know, if like me, you do suffer mental illness with depression, anxiety and so forth. It does hit very hard to see this, like, visually represented in such a way that feels so honest.
Mm, definitely, definitely. Mm-hmm. And what about you, B? What do you think?
She hated
it. Oh, yeah, I fucking despised it. No. Well, okay, first things first, obviously Joan Allen is a spectacular actress. I will never not love her, no matter what she does. She's amazing. She's a total mensch. I love her. But also something interesting about that sort of feeds into what Marcy was just saying about how the, you know, one of the major aspects of the series is about depression, all these like this mental torture that people with this condition undergo. The design of the monster, like the way it looked, I think that's also a metaphor for, you know, being stuck in your own mind. Like you have all these voices stuck in your head, and it's all part of one great big monstrous organism that's overtaking like your body, basically. And just the way every single character is connected to this place, you know, we all have these worlds in ourselves. We have these souls, we have these voices, we have these monsters. And that's why I think what all the actors do, like everybody has that dark past.
And I think what's interesting, like now that you say about with the monster, the Long Boy, and also like the Long Boy's purpose throughout in Booyah Moon is to stop people from reaching the pool.
That's right.
And so from, basically
transferring from his realm into the real world.
Yeah, and also, like, having to sort of rejuvenate because, like, there's a scene early in the film where Scott actually gets has an attempted assassination. Someone attempts an assassination on his life at a, at a college. And now that I think about the Jackie connection, a main character's husband being assassinated. And, like, but you think, like, that might have been the cause of Scott's death, but no, he survived that with, you know, by going to Booyah Moon, getting the pool to rejuvenate him and then coming back. But then, of course, like, later on when he's going to a sort of a book signing and a book launch and all that, like, we see him, like, coughing. And then, of course, he goes to rejuvenate himself, but he says he's did that a few times. He keeps going there. He comes back at least partially healed, but he can't fully get there because the Long Boys keep him from getting to the pool. And then, of course, his wounds actually finally sort of come into fruition, and then he just finally dies. And it's such a heartbreaking scene as well. That was, and like just that sort of that scene where he's in the hospital with him and Lisi, it's such a heartbreaking moment. And I think what I think is interesting, because as we've talked about Stephen King so far in the series, like, he does such a good job at finding ways for us as an audience to relate to the characters. Like, whether it's like specific like things that the characters are doing or finding specific sort of struggles or things that they're going through that we can relate to, while also putting all this kind of more supernatural elements to it. And the thing is, like, if you took out all the Booyah Moon stuff and all the fantasy elements, like, this miniseries could still work on its own as, like, as a drama.
Yeah, definitely. I you know, almost the fantastical stuff kind of, like, as interesting as it is, I think if it was handled a little bit differently, I think it would have worked better for me, because it does kind of not explain things at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could almost see you know, with Scott's death, with what happens, that's almost like a metaphor for actually succumbing to suicidal thoughts.
Mm.
In a way where it's, you can't fight these demons anymore.
Mm.
And you succumb to it. But that's just, I guess, how I saw it. But I almost think, like, if we didn't have this Booyah Moon, or it was explained somewhat better, I think I perhaps would have gotten a little bit more out of it. But that said, I do think there's a lot of very strong elements and aspects of this, which we've already pretty much discussed. And I don't know why I just interjected, but I felt like talking. So
that's all right. I'm happy for everyone to interject if they have something to say. So, but I guess for me, like, this whole miniseries, like, I do agree with you. I think, like, even though I found the Booyah Moon stuff still pretty interesting, and also, you know, the flashbacks to, you know, Scott's life with his family, like, with them, like, is this kind of, like, thing that's happening to the family, like, a supernatural thing that sort of takes over them at some point, or is it just... just a sort of a metaphor for mental illness and having to, I guess, you know, the reason they cut themselves or release the quote unquote bad is kind of freeing themselves from it. I guess that stuff, I guess in a way, I think like you, it could have been delved into a lot more. But I guess at the same time, now that I think about it, I guess by having it there and showing us, you know, these things, I guess we're kind of meant to see it as more of a, as a metaphor for.
Oh, like, it definitely is. Yeah.
Like be what you're saying, like, Booyah Moon could be in a way as that, sort of a metaphor, that place to be a metaphor for that state of depression that you're in, and it almost like a limbo or something like that. And until you're finally free. But I also got to say, the score for this miniseries is also fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Which was done by a person by the name of Clark. So that's who did the score. But I think the score is really great because it goes back and forth being this sort of very creepy and also this very beautiful score. Like, it changes on a dime throughout quite a number of episodes in terms of, you know, what's happening in the scene. But I thought the music was just so beautifully done. And also, anytime the long boy comes in, then you hear sort of this, like, this choir. It just sounded really creepy, almost as if, like, that's the voice of the long boy. And it just really, I found very unsettling. But I guess that could almost be a wrap on Lisey's story, unless there were any aspects of the miniseries we could talk about a little bit further.
You mean besides Dane DeHaan eating chicken?
Well, I mean, we could easily do an entire podcast on his entire eating habits throughout this whole miniseries. Yeah.
Well, I think, I think we've probably talked about as much as we can probably remember to actually discuss. So I guess it's final thoughts and ratings.
Indeed. B, what are your final thoughts on Lisey's story and your rating for it?
All right. So the first two parts of Lisey's story were incredibly strong. Throughout the entire series, the actors were fantastic. I don't think anyone lagged behind whatsoever. They all understood the assignment. But in the tail end of the series, that's when it started to slightly falter. And I think that's because King always has a habit of starting very strong, but he doesn't quite know how to end it. And it's pretty prevalent here. But in saying so, I think it is because of the performances that you care. Because if something can make you care, it's actually fulfilled its brief. So I do believe that Lisey's story could have been made, I feel it could have been executed a little more smoothly, but I would have to say that I find that the series is quite strong, and it's a very good meditation on, you know, basically the things that trouble us all, but we never really speak about it. So in a way, it was therapy.
Definitely. And what about you, Marcy? What are your final thoughts? And Babe, we didn't get your rating for the miniseries.
Dan, you got me. Okay, so all in all, I would have to give Lisey's story a 7 out of 10. I do recommend seeing it, but it may not necessarily be for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, my thoughts pretty much reflect Bee's quite a lot. I think, yeah, for the most part, this is actually quite compelling and interesting, and it does this very bizarre, I guess, metaphorical look at a lot of these themes like grief, depression, mental illness, all these kinds of things. And it's almost like it doesn't want this to be a stigma in a way that it kind of represents itself. So I found that really interesting. But yeah, I think this kind of did lose its way a little bit within the third act, so more towards like episode 6-7, where I found that the, you know, kind of wrap up actually makes a lot of sense. And I think it went with it really well. It's a very beautiful last episode. Dog, stop! I can kind of hear a thing with you scratching. Enough! Don't stare at me with that adorable face.
Right. He's the scratchy boy.
I'll continue. Stop, Freddy. And yeah, it is very watchable with the performances are all fantastic, especially if you're fans of any one of these actors or all of them. And yeah, visually it's very stunning. It's an interesting watch. While not entirely wholly successful, I think it does a pretty good job. Whereas say I maybe got more out of like The Outsider, which is, you know, again, something very different. I still think this is pretty damn decent. And being that I absolutely love Julianne Moore, like, of course, I'd be watching this regardless of this podcast. And I'm now, you know, I was kind of already strangely obsessed with Dane DeHaan, but I'm like all in now after this. That's it. I'm done. wow, dude. Okay, I want some fried chicken. yes. But yeah. I give this 3.5 Dane DeHaan eating fried chickens out of 5.
yes. I would say I liked it just a tad more than both of you, at least in terms of what rating I will give it.
Well, at least but you liked it.
Yeah, I really liked it because I didn't know what to expect from Lisi's story. And I do agree, I think sort of some aspects, or at least kind of the booyaboo aspects could have been explored or explained a little bit more. But at the same time, though, like now that I think about it, I can just view those scenes as more metaphorical rather than kind of literal in a way. But everything else I think really worked. I think it's beautifully directed. It's beautifully shot. The performances from everyone are just great. It's definitely Julianne Moore's show through. Like, I mean, she is Lisi in after all. But also, like, she's backed by a great supporting cast who just bring their A game as well. And I think Stephen King did a really good job screenwriting-wise, like, with all these episodes. And I think this would definitely put, at least for me, of the films and TV projects that we've seen of his that he adapted or wrote himself, I would definitely say this is definitely up there as his strongest screenplays or teleplays, I should say. I think it's just a beautifully made series. And it's kind of interesting it's not talked about at the moment, even though it only just finished like a few weeks ago. But I suppose at least compared to something like The Outsider, where everyone was kind of aware of that when that was out. But I guess because, you know, this is on Apple TV, so it's, you know, unless you have Apple TV, you can't really watch it. But I would definitely recommend everyone to check it out, to kind of see something that's a little bit different. Like, I do agree with you, B, it won't be for everyone, given sort of like, it's definitely has a lot of sort of very sort of dark subject matter. And it's not a full-on horror story as well, because it does sort of mix genres as well. But I think it's just a really well-done miniseries, and I was very compelled by it from beginning to end. Like, it does have its imperfections, of course, but I think it's sort of in the end, like the very last scene where we kind of sort of find, like once, you know, Lisi gets to the end of her book and finds that sort of notepad that Scott left for her. It sort of like both kind of frees him from being tied there at Booyah Moon, like, and he is able to move on, but also it's about, you know, her able to move on as well. Like, it's a story of grief and loss, but it is a story about moving, you know, able to move on and letting, which I think is something I think a lot of people who have experienced loss in their life could relate to on some level. Right. So for me, overall, I give this about 4 out of 5. But it might get an extra 5. But one of those stars, is, or at least half those stars, is definitely just for Dane DeHaan eating everything throughout this whole miniseries.
the only thing, well, actually, he was something that he was also eating was also the scenery as well.
Exactly. And like, not only was he eating all the food, he was eating the entire scenery, but in a good way, of course.
he was like sucking that shit down like Kirby. That's what he was doing.
Although I gotta say though, like, and again, even though yes, this whole episode is a spoiler filled one, when Lisi comes back from Boya Moon and finds his torn up body in the pool, I'm like thinking to myself, damn, this is gonna a lot of mess she's gonna have to clean up of that pool. She's gonna have to drain that pool, get blood out. And then of course she disposes the body, obviously. But yeah. It's like, it is a sort of like, I just kept thinking, that was the first thought that popped in my head. It's like, she's going to have to get rid of all that blood out of that pool now.
Maybe the Boya Moon water will just clean it up.
Exactly.
I don't know.
But no, overall, I definitely recommend this miniseries and for all our listeners to check it out. And if everything was talked about in this whole episode, if you're someone who doesn't really give a shit about spoilers and is listening to this episode without seeing the miniseries, I definitely would recommend checking it out. I think you'd find it a pretty riveting experience nonetheless. But yeah, that'll be a wrap on episode 17 of The King Zone. Yeah. Once again, thank you, Marcy, for always being a great co-host.
You're welcome.
And also, B, thanks for coming on the podcast and talking about this miniseries with us.
Thank you most kindly.
Indeed. Now, B, where can people find you on the internet this week?
Well, if you are really so inclined, you can find me sniffing around on the Facebook Super Network. I also have a Twitter account, which will be linked in the bottom of this podcast. I also have a personal writer's blog, but I don't see why anyone would want to read it because it's really quite shitty.
Everyone should check it out. Everyone needs to go read these blogs.
And also, I also do have a strong presence on Insta. So yeah, if you wanna like knock me up for whatever goddamn reason, however desperate you are, I'm gonna be there too. And of course, I'm gonna be around on the Super Network podcast. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
And that's where you can find me.
Indeed. And Marcy, where can people find you on the internet this week?
Yeah, so as B mentioned, all of our info is in the show notes description for the podcast, which you can access and check the links. However, our base of operations for the Super Network is at supermarcy.com. You can find us on the Facebooks at facebook.com/thesupernetwork. You can join our Facebook group through there. It is the Super Network group. And you can participate in discussions, polls, meme sharing, all sorts of fun stuff. You can, of course, find me on Twitter at twitter.com/supermarcy. You can read my weird ramblings and whatever the heck I post on Twitter. You can always find the Super Network on all the platforms. As I've mentioned, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. It is SM_Super Network. We're on the Instagram, the.super.network. We're on TikTok as under the Super Network. You can find us on YouTube. Just look up the Super Network YouTube channel and see all the stuff we have going on there. Sometimes it might be a little bit slow because last few weeks we've had a bit of illness and eye size and all sorts of weird stuff. So we'll be definitely back on the YouTubes by the time, hopefully, this episode comes out. And, of course, you can find the King Zone podcast and all of our many other podcasts on all your podcast streaming platforms. And once again, check the show notes for everything. Bede, how about you?
If people want to find me personally, they can find me at my Twitter page at twitter.com/bjamine or my Facebook, I mean, my personal writer's page on Facebook at facebook.com/terribleaussie. And of course, you can find all my writings over at supermarcy.com with all my reviews and columns. And of course, if people want to find me on Instagram, they can find me at instagram.com/bjamine as well.
Excellent. And I'll just give a small shout out to the Bricked Pit podcast. I recently recorded a guest spot on their new podcast. I think they have about 9 or 10 episodes so far. A new fun podcast. So definitely check out the Bricked Pit podcast. They are on Facebook and Twitter. And in a few weeks, you'll be able to hear my guest spot on there.
Nice.
Woohoo.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Because we like to share the love with other podcasts.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, so that'll be a wrap on this episode of The King Zone. Look out again later this month for our next episode, since there's 2 episodes of The King Zone this month. And won't say what the next episode's going to be, but it's going to be a pretty big one. Mm. I'll just leave that at that.
That's what she said.
I was waiting for it.
But just to steal your bit, Marcy.
Mm-hmm.
Marcy's been super.
Yes.
Bede has been terrible because he hasn't got any chicken or sub or sandwiches or pizzas to eat around the house at the moment.
Somebody feed Bede.
Indeed. And B is just being awesome as always, and everyone better go read her blog right now.
Please. I'll give you a kiss.
Indeed. If you want to get that, just go to the blog right now.
Goodness be.
Exactly. But we'll see you all later, everybody. See
you,
everyone.
Bye. Thank you.
This little woman, I feel it's happened to me, and I'm telling you, it's too late to turn back now. I believe I'm falling in love. It's too late to turn back now. I believe I'm falling in love. I found myself phoning her at least 10 times. You know, it's so unusual for me to carry on this way. I tell ya, I can't sleep at night. I'm wanting to hold tight. I've tried so hard to convince myself that this feeling just can't be right. And I'm telling ya, it's too late.
Professor Dashman.
Mr. Dooley.
You look just like your picture.
Do I?
Same smart face.
Really?
Really? Same smart face?
Would you like some fried chicken?
White meat.
I beg your pardon?
White meat is the best. It's non-contentious.
Really?
Pork is the other white meat. I don't eat pork. Too much like human flesh. I read that someplace.
The Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN.
Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised.
A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi, so just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show.
Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal.
You can also find the link in the show notes.
Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy shark doo 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 doo. Surfy shark doo 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 doo.
And now back to the show.